The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum from Accelerated Government Strategies, providing advisory consulting for innovative startups to help grow government revenue. Every week, Aileen and Gigi welcome Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives who are taking risks to engineer success and shape the future. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Now your hosts, Aileen Black and Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today, we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin. Allison currently serves as the Special Advisor for National Digital Strategy. Allison is a professor at the University of Maryland's iSchool. Druin is taking a two-year leave of absence to assist the National Park Service as a visiting scholar and will help the National Park Service develop its digital strategy for the agency's upcoming 2016 centennial and beyond. Dr. Druin, let's talk about what you're doing at the National Park Service. You're taking a leave of absence and you're helping them with their digital strategy. I mean, when I think of Park Service, I think of Yosemite. So explain to me how the digital strategy is playing at the National Park Service.
Well, currently, what many people don't realize is that there is a lot of digital used throughout the National Park Service, whether it's in apps that people download before they get to a park, whether it's web pages that people go and look at to plan their visit, whether it's actual infrastructure that's going on inside the parks to run the fees, to run the actual park itself. The challenge is we have a lot of excellence across the Park Service, across the country, but we don't connect the dots as well as we could. We should be leveraging a lot of the energies we have between parks to be able to support more digital experiences that make it easier for everybody to access the national parks.
I would imagine just making you aware of there's such a broad portfolio of Park Service resources or jewels out there. Is the digital strategy, is that helping make public awareness?
Absolutely. And in terms of public awareness, it actually starts with park awareness, and it starts with internally to the Park Service for letting people know what other parks are doing, what our own organization is doing, and being able to then let other people know. We will be launching a new website designs. We will be looking at our portfolio of apps. We'll be looking at how we make use of new technologies. But it's hard because just remember, this is not just in Washington, D.C. These are parks 410 across the United States.
So it's this hyper-connected world that cloud computing is providing is really helping the National Park Service not only outside but inside.
Absolutely.
So Allison, let's take a step back and hear about how you got to this fascinating career and fascinating role that you're in now. So let's go way back to your childhood. I'd love to hear a little bit about that. In particular, who or what inspired you when you were growing up to do what you've become?
Interestingly enough, my dad and I used to go to a national park that was right inside our hometown, West Orange, New Jersey. It was Thomas Alva Edison's labs. The Thomas Edison National Historic Park is one of the 410 parks. And we used to go there every year. And it was inspirational not to just see dusty bottles and things that, were used back in a few hundred years. What was inspirational was that it was Thomas Alva Edison. I learned the story of innovation. I learned the story of that scientists aren't people that make this plan and make it happen. Edison is well known for having tried a million different things that failed and then finding the next thing. But what was really powerful was that he wasn't a theoretical scientist. He took his ideas and brought it out, manufactured them, and brought it out to the world. And that influenced me a great deal. It was to show me that the creative process can really make a great impact on the world. My dad's a scientist, and it was something that we shared together.
But you, there's a couple threads that you talked about that I want to pick up on. But I guess the first is that you talked about being inspired by Thomas Edison and being a scientist and how he took a very practical approach. Yet you, your background, you went to school to study graphic design. That doesn't seem like the natural path for somebody who wants to end up in science. How did you decide to do that?
Interestingly enough, my mother was an artist and my father a scientist. And I am the melding of these two people. My mother was a jeweler and my father a chemical engineer. And granted, you mix it together and you don't get graphic design, but that's what happened. I realized that my head thought like a designer. When I was applying to colleges, I applied for half art schools and half not, because I couldn't decide what it was I wanted to be when I grew up. And one of the things I didn't realize at the time is that I was a very interdisciplinary thinker. I would translate in my brain. When I heard something about art, I translate it to technology or innovation. When I heard the technology innovation, I translate it to the other. So I never followed the dots the way you were supposed to. Maybe that was because I was a female and thinking about my approach to who I was going to be was going to be different. But that was the way it was. I did go to a graphic design program at Rhode Island School of Design that helped me think as a problem solver. It was actually much more theoretical in its approach to design than you will go out and be a graphic designer.
I think we talk a lot about and talk to millennials. And one of the things that we hear from them is that there's a certain amount of angst that they suffer because they feel like they need to know what their entire path will be and have that all mapped out. And honestly, I think that some of them who are obviously like you, very interdisciplinary and right brain, left brain kind of people and have one foot in the world of science and the other foot in the world of art, it makes that even harder. So did you struggle with that, or you just decided to make those choices along the way? Because your career has been kind of a melding of both.
It's interesting. I always say to my own students that it's very good to plan, but just know your plans are going to change. And that's what happened to me. I actually, in my junior year in my graphic design program, I had the honor of unboxing the first Macintoshes that were to be used in the school. I fell in love with those boxes, partially because I wasn't very good at making a straight line on my own with my own hand. But suddenly these boxes could enable me to do so much more than I imagined. I got so involved in those boxes that by senior year, I was actually I was a helper in the lab. I was a TA and I got very excited. And in fact, actually by my senior thesis, I created the first senior thesis on a computer. That was fascinating because in fact, my committee could not agree whether or not to pass me. I thought I was going to faint on the floor at the time, but it turned out it was because they were concerned that was my thesis more about the tool itself or the content that they expected from their student. I had created an interactive video text experience about letter form and the history of letter form, and literally the proceedings stopped because they were arguing so much. And at the time, my advisor at the time said, folks, you can't stop her. How can you stop her? She's going to go to MIT. She's just been accepted to a master's program in MIT. You're going to stop her? And so we did stop the proceedings for, I think it was for half a day. And I remember calling up my mother and saying, I'm so sorry. I don't know if I'm going to graduate. And I think it's all because of computers. And my mother said, oh, those computers. So I think technology in my early years was just the best tool for what I wanted to do visually. As I moved through my programs, by the time I got to my master's degree, I had absolutely fallen in love with the idea that I could take these technologies and make them for children. Okay, and make them more appropriate for children. Instead of dragging children into the world of computing, I was going to drag these computers by hook or crook into the world of children. And I was going to say, stop it, computing. You don't have to be what you have, what all the regular people say you are. We're going to drag you in and we're going to make sure that you're made for kids, because for kids, this is a powerful tool. And so I fell in love with, in fact, it wasn't the technology itself, but the power of what it could do for people. So I've always been a people person. And in fact, in later years, my actual research is in human-computer interaction. And it doesn't start with the word computing. It starts with the word human.
Are you applying that to your approach with the National Digital Strategy for the National Park Service by switching it up a little bit? And like your mom said, instead of saying those dang computers, you're saying, wow, look at what the National Park Service has done to open it up with their digital strategy to everyone.
Yes, it's not about what the technology must do in the parks. It's about what the parks need in terms of the next generation of tools. And it's about caring about the people, the places, and respecting the tradition, 100-year tradition of the Park Service, and basically coming and saying, what power do we need in the 21st century to continue the traditions of the Park Service?
Today in the studio, we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin, National Park Service. Coming up, we'll ask Allison about her early career. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin, Special Advisor for the National Digital Strategy for the National Park Service.
So Allison, I want to go back to a question that you answered in the last segment that intrigued me, because you said you were inspired growing up by Thomas Edison Park and in New Jersey. And when I think about national parks and the National Park Service, I think about Yosemite. I think about all of the big, wide outdoor spaces that we have in this country that the National Park has done such a good job with, or maybe the Appalachian Trail. But I don't think about a park in West Orange, New Jersey that's dedicated to an inventor. So tell us a little bit about that. What was it? And maybe there's more to the breadth of the national parks than we realized.
There is absolutely more to the national parks than most people realize. It is actually a combination of historical, cultural, and natural resources that we are trying to preserve. And it is interesting because there are a lot of smaller parks in urban areas, near urban areas, that are not necessarily giant monuments, but are culturally important to the history and the heritage of the United States. Thomas Alva Edison, obviously an inventor, someone that impacted the world that we know it today. But there is Women's Rights National Park up in Seneca Falls, New York. There is one of our newer parks is the Manhattan Project, and thinks about the impact of what we did with the Manhattan Project during World War II and the bomb and so on. We have many, many parks across the country that are not big Western parks. Interestingly enough, I'm actually for the first time as an adult seeing these big Western parks that I never as a kid went to, partially because we didn't have the money to travel unless you got into a car and traveled for 4 days and so on. So that wasn't what we did. Many people don't realize that there are national parks all over the country. Some of our largest parks, interestingly enough, are actually in Alaska. The largest amount of space devoted to national parks is in Alaska. So we have a diversity of riches, but it is diverse. And people need to understand that you don't just have to go to Yosemite and the Grand Teton National Park to see a national park. Absolutely, in every state across the country, you have places you can go.
So are these national parks like the one that you talked about, Edison, is that an outdoor space or is it an indoor space or a combination? I mean, what makes it a park and not a museum, as an example?
It's interesting. We use the term historical park. Some would call it a museum, but you go in and out of buildings. It is the notion that you go to a space, you go to learning in context. It is a place that is alive because of the physicality of it. It is not a traditional museum because you have elements of what the Park Service brings to parks around the world. Certainly you have interpretive rangers who are people that interpret the experience. There are programs, there is, at least in Thomas Edison's the historical park, there's the Black Moriah that you go inside and you can feel like where they actually made movies for the first time. And so there is that feeling of space and introduction. Many of our national parks have visitor centers, but it is those visitor centers that are not necessarily meant to be museums, but welcoming spaces, introductory spaces that get you out into the rest of the park to explore.
Sounds like, Allison, that part, you know, the need for developing national parks hasn't stopped. I mean, history has begun, you know, continuing to be made. Where are some of the newest areas that the National Park Service is investing to preserve our nation's history?
Well, it's interesting that you say the National Park Service is investing. It's actually the American people that bring to our government places that we want to preserve. And so one of our newest places is actually the Manhattan Project. It was spearheaded by many people that felt that it is a controversial part of our history, but it's an important part to speak to. We have 410 national parks now. And these national parks are, you know, natural parks, but also these cultural and historical parks as well.
I read that there's some recent museums that have to do with women's rights.
Absolutely. The Women's Rights National Park up in Seneca Falls is a wonderful place to explore how women fought for the right to vote, for women's rights. Today, it's an amazing place as well because it's a place that celebrates what women can do anywhere in any field. And so, for example, in the summer, they bring in kids to do STEM-related activities to get kids to understand you too can do whatever you want to do.
So, Allison, let's shift a little bit. You are now at NPS, but you've worked with them for many years in your role at the University of Maryland. And when I was looking up your background at Maryland, one of the things I read intrigued me because it said that you became the university's first futurist. And I don't know what a futurist is or what they do. So what is a futurist?
What happened was I helped to start something called the Future of Information Alliance. And it was at the University of Maryland in thinking about what are the possibilities for information in the future when it comes to technology, when it comes to new forms of sharing information. I worked with the vice president for research's office during the formation of that. It's now just about 5 years old. And so I spent a couple years actually being in the vice president's office, and they looked for an appropriate title for me to actually help people think about their future. Okay. And they called me, called me the chief futurist. And it was not because I could take a crystal ball and say, here, I'm going to predict the future. It was because I did go out and help all parts of the university, help them think about what their research future was. How do we move forward to get our great ideas out into the rest of the world?
Today in the studio, we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin, Special Advisor for the National Digital Strategy, National Park Service. Dr. Druin, you were at the University of Maryland for almost two decades. Was that your first job?
Interestingly enough, since I got my PhD, that was my first job. However, it sounds like, wow, I've done the same thing for 18 years. But what people don't realize is in academia, your job changes very often 3-4 years at a time. And so as a junior faculty member, you're thinking about your focus is research, your focus is getting those classes created and so on. As you grow through the tenure process, you become more of an administrator and more thinking about how do you develop new programs, how can you support and mentor folks in your college, in the university. One of a wonderful program I was a part of when I became a senior faculty member was I became an advanced professor. It was funded by the National Science Foundation to advance women and underrepresented minorities in academic experiences. And so many of us that were in that advanced program learned to mentor women and minority folks through academic experiences. But we ourselves, by learning this, also learned how to move through the academic and experience to become administrators. And honestly, that's what helped me think about what were my next steps as an administrator and to make change.
And your work at the University of Maryland, you were put in charge of research lab in the iSchool. iSchool sounds so cool. Tell us about that and the research that you did there.
The iSchool is actually short for Information School. It is part of a new movement of colleges across the country that have accepted that it's not just about being a library school. It's not just about being an archive school. It's not even just about being a design school. It's pulling together all different disciplines that say that at the center of our focus will be information, how people get to information, and what tools they use to explore that information and how it's impactful to them is what an iSchool does. It's one of the largest growing movements of new university colleges that you're going to see across the country. Many human-computer interaction labs now are actually within iSchools where they used to be in computer science schools primarily. It's a wonderful interdisciplinary college. While we are small, there is a larger organization called the iSchool Caucus, and we all share our experiences across the country, whether it's at the University of Washington, at Michigan, at Syracuse. We all share these values, and it's been wonderful to see how we've all grown as an iSchool movement.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin, National Park Service. Coming up, we'll ask Allison about her work with the University of Maryland's iSchool. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin, Special Advisor for the National Digital Strategy, National Park Service. Allison, I got to ask you, I read about an organization that you were part of and you actually got some awards from. It was the Sig Chai Academy that recognizes individuals of substantial contributions to and leadership in the field of human-computer interaction, which is just interesting in itself. You were elected to Sig Chai Academy. Tell us about the work that allowed you to become part of this very interesting organization, and I'd like to hear about Kids STEAM.
Okay. It's very interesting. Since I've been a graduate student, I've been involved in Sig Chai. Sig Chai is actually a special interest group of the Association for Computing Machinery, ACM. And it's fascinating because I find it's crazy. They've given me awards for being an outstanding scientist, and yet I have an undergraduate degree in graphic design. But what it did was it grew me as a student. And so I early on was a student volunteer for these conferences. And these conferences were amazing because I got to hear from people who designed the first icons for computing systems that you actually see today. I got to meet people that totally inspired me and got me going towards creating new technologies for kids. It's about a lot of people that care about people and try and figure out what the impact that technology has on those people and how do we change technology to help people. And I've never met a more amazing group of people that care so deeply, not just about the work, but about the people that actually are in the organization. So it's been an exciting time. Actually, in May, it's been 30 years since I've been a part of the organization, and I'll be chairing its international conference. There'll be 4,000 people there this year in San Jose, California.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Now, there's a point you just made. You went to school to study one thing, and yet you ended up learning. You know, kids today end up with such debt because of school. Do you think we need to look at our academic system and maybe marry more, physical and inexperienced learning versus just book learning?
Oh, I believe strongly in experiential learning. In fact, my graduate students twice a week are in the lab with me for years, working with kids. Kids come into our lab in the afternoons, two afternoons a week, to actually make new technologies with partners. And in fact, that's how I actually became first involved with the National Park Service. My graduate students have traveled all over the world working with various different partners and exploring the possibilities. In fact, many of my grad students, go on to become Dr. So-and-so, but they may end up going and working for Google, or they may end up going and working for a university or the National Park Service.
And, today so many kids get labeled. And I know so many kids that are very, very bright IQ-wise, but have learning differences. And this kind of hands-on learning can make all the difference in the world. I mean, Einstein was not a good student, but yet look what he was able to do. Is that what you're finding in your work?
What we're looking to see is how we can support not good students, but non-traditional learners. And I believe all of us are non-traditional learners. And I believe that we just have to find our paths to learning. I think sadly enough, many women are really not well supported in traditional learning paths. And so you see many of us getting multiple different kinds of degrees because we're actually trying to put together our own learning path that makes sense.
So, Allison, I want to delve into that a little bit more, right? Because I completely understand the concept that there are people who do fine in a traditional learning setting, being lectured to and taking notes and tests. And then I understand that there are others who don't. But you made an interesting comment that you think that women are even more impacted because they're not well supported if they're not traditional learners. So tell me a little bit more about that. What is it that makes women different or your young girls different?
Well, what we've seen in the teaching programs that I've been a part of at the University of Maryland, that women are better supported as learners if there's more social opportunity to work together with people. It doesn't have to be other women, but in teams, on applied projects, doing not book learning, not memorization, but doing things that matter. So interestingly enough, the area of computing that you see most often women gravitating to is human-computer interaction. And so in our lab of 50-some-odd people, we have about 50% women and 50% men. That is unheard of in almost any other area of computing in the traditional areas, whether it's in artificial intelligence, in computer vision, whatever it is.
And so we talk to many of our guests about STEM and how to encourage more people, but particularly more women and minorities into STEM fields. And, when you kind of peel back the onion on the STEM numbers, it gets even worse when you look at areas like computing and math versus the biological sciences, where the numbers are a little bit more balanced. And so we often ask how to encourage girls in those areas earlier. It sounds like part of your answer would be to help them have a more non-traditional learning path when it comes to those kinds of subjects.
I actually believe strongly in interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary learning for all people, okay? And I actually believe all of us would benefit greatly in living and learning programs that are transdisciplinary and really think about larger issues. So, for example, how do you have people major in climate change? Is it through a technology experience? Is it through a biological science experience? Is it through something completely different? How do you have people major in the issues that are our large problems today? It's truly by bringing people of all different kinds of thinking together. I know that University of Maryland has been striving for these living and learning interdisciplinary programs. I believe many other universities across the country are doing the same kind of thing. But it's a challenge because these are more expensive. These are more time consuming to create. These are more people intensive, but they're well worth it.
Well, in addition to the interdisciplinary aspect, there's also, we've had a lot of guests talk about the fact that women seem to be more attracted to STEM studies and STEM fields if they can see the practical application at the end of it, that young boys tend to be interested in technology for technology's sake, whereas girls tend to gravitate toward it if they can understand how the technology can actually be used to solve some real-world problem. Has that been your experience?
It is, in general, correct. However, obviously, I see all different types of students that, you know, I see some boys that really need the application. I see some girls that love the theoretical. But it is really important that we give kids paths to everything. And I see the same thing in the National Park Service as well.
Today in the studio, we're talking to Dr. Allison Druin, Special Advisor for the National Digital Strategy, National Park Service. Now, Dr. Druin, I'd like to double click on something that you said. You said gender disparities. And I think that we all see that there's still some gender disparities that exist in the workplace today. Can you comment on maybe how technology can help close that gap?
Technology is a wonderful bridge for many people of different disciplines to come together over and to feel more comfortable over. Many people have said, well, how are you, you know, in charge of digital strategy for the Park Service? Isn't that wouldn't you expect that there would be this would be a male dominated area? Yes, you would expect that. But it turns out that the bridge is that we all care about parks and we all care about people and we care about bringing the American people into those parks. And so if you care about the reason for the technology, then technology becomes that bridge for conversation, for change, for creativity. And I see it. I've always seen technology as a creative tool.
Technology is a male-dominated area. So you just, you know, reinforced that with your statement just now. Have you had to deal with some tough situations or what strategy you used to kind of, you know, make, you know, you thought you were being treated inequitably? How did you approach it?
There are times that people assume because I make new technologies for kids, okay, that, well, that must be a female-oriented way to approach technology. Very sad, but true. I've seen times when people have not taken my research seriously. I've seen times when I've actually not been able to publish in certain journals because they perceive that that is not a serious way to go about you doing your research. And yet, I've gotten these international awards for being a scientist, for being a part of an academy, for being for making an impact in human-computer interaction. I have learned that when a male comes up to you and says, you know, you probably get more done if you were a little less serious. If you, sadly enough, yes, the smile thing I heard years ago. Sadly enough, when I was just a junior professor and we had just adopted our first daughter, my husband is also a faculty member at the University of Maryland, and he and I have had parallel careers, and we've been on the same path the whole time. And as junior professors in his department in computer science, they congratulated him. In my department, at the time, I was not in the iSchool. I was in the College of Education. I was told not to mention that I had adopted a child because that might impact people's perception of whether or not I could get my tenure track done. Amazing, huh?
Today in the studio, we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin, National Park Service. Coming up, we'll ask her about how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Federalnewsradio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. Federalnewsradio.com, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Dr. Allison Druin, Special Advisor for National Digital Strategy, National Park Service.
Allison, you've had such success in your career, both at the University of Maryland and now at the Park Service. With all the competing priorities in our lives, many of the women that we've talked to have made difficult choices along the way. So sometimes those choices may have delayed or dampened their success or sent them in a different direction, and some of the obstacles turn out to be blessings in disguise. Have you had to face difficult choices that sent you in a different direction?
Difficult choices. I think every choice is difficult, to be honest with you, because we all perceive that it's supposed to be a straight line. We do this, and then we do that, and then, of course, we'll do this. But you know, it wasn't my choice and my expectation that as soon as I got tenure that I was going to become the next director of a 50-person lab. But I was. I was director of the Human-Computer Interaction Lab. I didn't expect that a few years later I was going to be an associate dean, or a few years after that I was going to lead this Future of Information Alliance. It just all happened from one to the next. What we make the mistake of believing is that in academia, because you've worked in one place for a very long time, it's the same thing. It's not. I think I had it luckier than other people, because my husband is also an academic, and he and I shared the same frustrations. We share two children. We also made the decision to adopt children. We were adoptive parents by choice. Because we could have our pre-tenure baby and our post-tenure baby, and we could plan it, you know. But we disappeared in between semesters to go and adopt our first child. And so many people had no idea that we even had a child, because we never even stopped working for 10 seconds. But having my husband going through some of the same work experiences that I did really was a very supportive, wonderful thing. He has always been a wonderful partner in what I've done, but there have been times when he didn't get the challenges I had. One of which was when one of our colleagues said, you know, you shouldn't be so serious, you know, don't take, and I came back, I was so furious, and he didn't understand it. It was one of those moments when I said, oh, why can't people get it all? So anyway, so there are times and it's difficult, but we move on.
So it sounds like you're not only a partner in marriage, you're a partner in life. We've had so many successful women on the program talk about the importance of this in helping them achieve everything they want to do on both sides of the coins, both from their personal life and their professional life. Do you see it that way?
Oh, absolutely. Interestingly enough, the research shows in terms of successful women in their careers is that you have what we call mentoring circles. You don't just have one person that supports you throughout the whole, you know, your whole experience, but you have different people that together form a strong center for you and that help you move forward into what you need to do.
So, Allison, you have had a wonderful career at the University of Maryland, and now for 2 years you're at the Park Service. What's next? Will you go back to Maryland? What's next for you in your career?
This is a fascinating question, because I'm not sure. This is one of those times where, yes, I'm on loan from the University of Maryland for 2 years to the Park Service. And ideally, I'll go back and then I'll take a new leadership position at the University of Maryland. But if there are certain things that need me to continue to work on certain things, I can do that if it's needed. I think that there have been times in my life where I've said, I just don't know what's next, because there's a lot of different possibilities. I love working in government. I never imagined that academia and government could fulfill me in two different ways, but in really wonderful ways. So I would suggest to many academics who haven't gotten out of their universities, go take a position. I have an interagency personnel agreement that is essentially gives me the ability to spend time in a government agency. Go do that. It's a great way to see another part of the world that you wouldn't have expected. It feels comfortable because it feels a lot like academia, but it's not. And I feel that I'm growing as an administrator and as a leader because I took that step.
So that's a great point and gives rise to the question, right? You had already worked as a partner with the National Park Service, but now you're on the inside. So how is it different being on the inside? What other observations have you made?
I think the difference being on the inside versus the outside, because we basically worked on lots of different projects in creating new experiences for families to have in parks with technology. But what I realize is that being on the inside, I'm now able to see the larger picture. I'm able to see the 50,000 foot view of things. I'm able to see how to connect the dots more. Whereas as a partner, people would come to me and say, hey, we need X. And so we would do it and we would be successful and we'd have a wonderful experience in co-designing together. But it's that 50,000 foot viewpoint that I'm really enjoying.
Today in his studio, we're talking to Dr. Allison Druin, Special Advisor for the National Digital Strategy, National Park Service. Dr. Druin, I've enjoyed so much talking with you today. You've had such success on both sides, personal and professional. If you were to go back and to provide some pieces of advice to the younger Allison to help her to achieve in today's world what you've been able to achieve or maybe even find even a further dream, what would you tell her?
Oh, what a good question. I think I would tell her that success is about not trying to be like somebody else, but trying to find the core of who you really are and your unique value and your strength, and to try and amplify that strength and to find the people that are good at helping you amplify that strength. Because without other people, and without amplification, you can't be everything that you want to be or you need to be.
Today in the studio, we're talking with Dr. Allison Druin, National Park Service. Allison, I want to thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your life and your advice and your journey. You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum, founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. Learn more about AGS and the work they do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday afternoons at 1 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.